My featured musical this evening is She Loves Me, with music by Jerry Bock and lyrics by Sheldon Harnick. And we shall be listening to the original 1963 Broadway cast recording. The musical opened on Broadway at the Eugene O'Neill Theatre on April the 23rd, 1963, and ran for 301 performances, receiving 3 Tony Award nominations and 1 win for Jack Cassidy in the category of Best Featured Actor in a Musical in the process. And to tell us all about the background of She Loves Me, it is my very great pleasure to welcome back to the airwaves of 96.5 Inner FM via telephone from New York, Tony Award-winning lyricist Sheldon Harnick. Good evening, Sheldon.
What a splendid introduction. Thank you. You covered everything.
Well, the idea for turning She Loves Me into a musical came from the producers, I believe, Lawrence Kasher and Philip McKenna, who had seen the Ernst Lubitsch film version, The Shop Around the Corner.
Right. Actually, it was just Larry Kasher at the beginning. It was his idea. Mm-hmm. He brought Phil McKenna in later. But Larry loved the movie. He got the rights to make a musical out of it, and invited me and Jerry Bock up to his office and told us what he wanted to do. And both Jerry and I loved the film, the old Jimmy Stewart, Maggie Sullivan film. We just loved it. So we said yes immediately. Mm-hmm. And then Larry said, the writer I would like to do the book is a writer named Joe Masteroff. Do you know his work? And as it happened, Joe had a play on Broadway at that time featuring the actress Julie Harris. Mm-hmm. And both Jerry and I had seen it, and we loved it. And we said, oh, that would be wonderful. So then came the problem of director. Who do you want for director? We wanted Gower Champion.
Yes.
And so Larry Kasher contacted Gower Champion. He heard about the idea. He said, it's a lovely idea, but I can't do it because I have a conflicting, I have something else I have to do. Mm-hmm. So instead, Jerry and I said, look, we've worked with Hal Prince already twice as producer. We've seen his work on a musical that he was called in to try and repair, and we think he's very gifted, and we would like him to be our director. So Larry Kasher said, fine. And we contacted Hal. Hal was thrilled. This was to be his first Broadway musical.
Yes.
And the day after that Hal accepted, Gower Champion called and said, listen, he said, I'm free. I don't have that conflict, so I can do your show.
Ah.
And we were torn. We were torn, but we thought, no, we offered it to Hal in good faith, and we should keep Hal, and we did, and we never regretted it for a minute. Hal was simply wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had a meeting with Joe Masteroff. Joe had never done a musical, so our advice to him was very simple. We said, write a play. Do the musical adaptation as a play, but make it half the length you would if you were writing a regular play.
Yes.
Because music, songs, and choreography will fill up the other half. And so that's what Joe did.
Uh-huh. And it was originally a play, Parfumerie, by Miklos Laszlo. I guess that was set in Hungary, was it, that the original film, The Shop Around the Corner, was based on?
That's right, yeah, a play that had never been done in this country, in the United States. I think sometime in the last few years, I think somebody got a hold of the play and did it somewhere, but I have no idea how it was received, and I hope it wasn't done in Hungarian. But we had read it. Joe Masteroff, he read it once, he watched the film, and then he went his own way, and he changed certain values in the script to give this character more to do, that character less to do, make the villain more villainous, and so forth. And it really turned out to be Joe's adaptation. It's different from the film, from the play, and from subsequent. As you know, there have been two subsequent movie adaptations. One was, I think, with Judy Garland, called In the Good Old Summertime.
Yes.
And
yes.
What was it about? Telephones.
You've Got Mail, I think. With Tom Hanks.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, which I saw, and I had a major objection to it. What I loved about the original was that the hero and the heroine were intelligent people, but extremely shy.
Yes.
And despite their intelligence and their good looks, they were so shy that they had never made connections with the opposite sex. In the film with Tom Hanks and whoever the leading lady was, at the beginning of the film, you realize that they're both involved in very serious relationships with very handsome opposite numbers, and then those relationships break up, so they're free to start a new relationship. And I thought, my goodness, these people aren't shy at all. They're high functioning, so, you know, who cares?
Indeed. And in a departure from your previous musicals, this one was on a far more intimate scale, I guess. Instead of having a large-scale chorus, you only had about a handful of people, which did duty for chorus numbers and playing the odd subsidiary characters. So
that's exactly right, yeah. Awesome. Also, it was very close to Jerry, because Jerry is Hungarian.
Oh, okay.
And so he identified and with that music, and his little miniature overture is like a pair of Hungarian tunes just put back to back. It's witty and it's wonderful, and it really sets the mood.
Mm-hmm. And being a more intimate musical, of course, you had more time to concentrate on the lead characters and also the subsidiary characters, giving each of them one or two songs in the score.
Yeah, the mistake we made originally was we just loved every character in the show, and we found that it was very conducive to writing music for it. And Joe Masteroff not only is a good playwright, but he has a very pronounced musical sensitivity, so that the script he gave us was loaded with musical ideas, and quite often they were his ideas for additional musical numbers. So when we went out on our pre-Broadway tryout, what I'm about to say, I don't believe myself, but it seems like we had 45 minutes of music too much.
Oh.
I don't think it could have been possibly that much. But I do remember that when we were out of town and we watched the show play before an audience, it seemed that we were drowning the audience in music, and we had to make enormous cuts, slashing cuts. The difference with an Andrew Lloyd Webber musical, you know, which may be practically music from beginning to end, mm-hmm. but there are not that many themes. He very smartly uses a few themes and then treats them differently. We had an endless number of themes.
Yes.
Every time we wrote a song, it was a new theme, and that's why it was very hard for the audience to absorb all that music in one sitting. So by the time we got back to New York, we had got it down to a reasonable amount of music. Even so, the cast album, if I remember right, we were delighted that I think it was MGM Records decided not to make it on one LP but on two. There was so much music, so we had, if I'm not mistaken, we had a two-record cast album.
Mm-hmm. And on this particular recording, of course, you had the wonderful Barbara Cook as the lead female role.
Barbara was the reigning ingenue at the time, and she didn't have to audition for us. We just went to her hat in hand and said, will you do our show? And she heard the score, and she agreed immediately, which was thrilling for us.
Mm-hmm. And Daniel Massey, of course, the son of the actor Raymond Massey. I believe this was his musical comedy debut on Broadway.
It was, yeah. And he was charming. The two of them were charming together.
And, of course, Jack Cassidy, he was the gentleman who introduced you to Jerry in the first place. Was this a bit of nostalgia for having him in the cast?
That's right. And Jack, as I think I said on one of our other interviews, Jack, as far as I'm concerned, was irreplaceable. He was an extraordinarily gifted and charismatic actor. And when he walked out on stage, he just took over. You loved being in his company. So it wasn't too great a surprise when he won a Tony for his performance. What was heartbreaking was that Jerry and I felt it was one of our best scores, and we didn't even get a nomination for a Tony Award somehow.
Quite disappointing, but I believe that was the season that had such things as Hello Dolly and so forth. So,
right, yeah. We also, the show, we got very good reviews, and we thought, good, we're going to have a 1 or 2 year run in this theater. We'll settle down. But after about 6 or 7 months, business began to fall off, which was a mystery to us. And we had a lot of postmortems trying to figure out what is it that the audience is not buying in this show. Is it that it's just too intimate a show compared to these big blockbusters like Hello, Dolly? Whatever it was, business just continued to fall off, and the show closed after about nine and a half months with a loss of the total investment, which we were heartbroken.
Indeed.
And consequently, I was so heartbroken that the following year, when they had the Grammy Awards for the best album of the year, I thought, I'm not going to go, because when we lose, it'll be another heartbreak for me. Mm-hmm. So I didn't go, and we won. And I've always regretted that I wasn't there when they announced the winner, which was She Loves Me.
Great. Well, that was a great payback, I guess, at last, that it received some recognition. And, of course, it became something of a cult musical, I believe.
It did. It was as I say, it was a heartbreaking thing when the show closed. And for, I think, close to a year, there were no productions. And then suddenly there was one production, which we were delighted with. And to our surprise, the cast of that production, which was out of New York somewhere, wrote Jerry Bock and me and Joe Mastroff a letter. They said, we don't understand what happened on Broadway, but our audiences love this show. And then a few months later, there was another production, and the same thing happened. We got another letter. And then little productions kept popping up all over the country. Not that many, but almost every time there was a production, we got a letter. And then we realized that it had become a cult show. Then, about a little over 10 years ago, I think, the Roundabout Theater, the off-Broadway Roundabout Theater in New York, did a production in New York. They did a revival. Mm-hmm. And the reviews were like love letters to the show. And that just catapulted the show into the mainstream of shows that get done, because the following year after that revival, there were 60 productions around the country. And She Loves Me, it was one of the most gratifying experiences that I've had in the theater, seeing this thing come back from the dead almost and become a living organism that's produced fairly often.
Indeed, and it was a production which had great love to it, I believe, with the original cast members. I suppose, being an intimate musical, well, I had more time to associate with each other and share more scenes with each other. And they speak very highly of it, Barbara Cook and Daniel Massey, the now late Daniel Massey, unfortunately. And
he's no longer with us. We saw his last performance on Broadway, where I think, if I remember correctly, it was a play about a German conductor who had been accused of Nazi sympathies, when actually he was helping his Jewish musicians in every way he could. And Danny was just wonderful. I can't remember who the conductor was, but Danny gave a wonderful performance. Mm-hmm. And Barbara, who's in her mid-80s now, if not older, Barbara is still going and still singing beautifully. She's just amazing.
Indeed, we've had the pleasure of seeing her performing cabaret in Melbourne in past years too.
Right, yeah, she's performed all over the world.
And interestingly enough, She Loves Me was the second, I believe, of your musicals with Jerry to receive a production in London, after Fiorello in 1962, which is quite extraordinary. One wouldn't have thought that the Londoners would relate to the New York City mayor, but evidently they did.
Now, I'm blocking on whether there were two productions. I think there was a first production which was not successful, but then there was a second one starring a wonderful British ingenue named Ruthie Henschel. Mm-hmm. And my wife and I went to see it, and their production was glorious and ran well over a year. It was really beautiful. I think it won the Olivier Award as the best revival of that year. And again, I wasn't there at the right time. Joe Mastroff went, so he was able to go and speak for all of us when he accepted the award.
Mm-hmm. Well, the original London production was in 1964, and of course it involved a bit of revision as far as you're concerned, because the British pronounced the word clerk instead of clerk.
Right. Also, I had used the word optometrist mm-hmm. in the lyric, and it meant something else in Britain, and I've forgotten how they got around that one. That's not an easy word to change. I don't think they used ophthalmologist, but they managed to change it.
Oh, so you weren't responsible for the revisions yourself?
No. Also, there was, I don't think this was a filmed version of anything that had been on stage, but if I remember, I think it was the BBC did a television version of it, which was just superb. They had actually trimmed the show for television purposes. I don't know how much they trimmed from it, but it was done so adroitly that when I saw it, I couldn't tell where things had been trimmed. It was just that well done. A woman named Gemma Craven was the leading lady. I've forgotten who the leading man was, but it was simply wonderful. And unfortunately, we thought this is something that might be done every Christmas. But our lawyers and our agents got greedy, and the second time around, they asked for so much money that the BBC just said, forget it.
So it wasn't repeated.
No, that's a shame. Has it been on a video or released on DVD, the particular version they did?
I don't know. I can't answer that question.
Mm-hmm.
I hope so, but I really don't know.
Uh-huh. And, of course, we have the demo recordings that you and Jerry made for the show released on Sheldon Harnick Hidden Treasures, and these are some of the numbers which eventually didn't make it into the show in its final form, but we shall have the luxury of hearing them for ourselves. And
as I said, we wrote much too much music originally, so when Bill Rudman and Ken Bloom, who produced the Hidden Treasures set, when they said, "Do you have, you know, let's see what you have from She Loves Me," we just snowed them under with all that music. And they chose wisely. I love what they chose to put on the Hidden Treasures set.
Mm-hmm. Well, the first number, of course, is Tell Me I Look Nice, which was sung by the heroine Amalia Balash. And this was replaced in the eventual version. But why was this particular song rejected, can you recall?
That was interesting. I wrote a song for Amalia. Amalia goes to work, and all the other clerks start flattering her, saying, "Oh, you look wonderful. What is this?" And Kodai, of course, says, "Ah, she must be getting ready for a date." Anyway, she sings this song. She's so unsure of herself. She sings, "Please, it's taken me hours to get ready, and I do have a date tonight, but please tell me I look nice." That was what the song was about. And it was a very kind of romantically oriented. And the way I wrote it, in my mind, I had a waltz rhythm, a 3-4 rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
And I was surprised when Jerry Bach got the lyric. He realized that it was romantic, but also he took advantage of the fact that Amalia was so insecure. So instead of writing it in 3-4 time, he wrote it in 5-4 time, which gave it a little kind of a hesitation, a little kind of halting quality.
Mm-hmm.
And oddly enough, it's one of Steve Sondheim's favorite numbers that was written for this show.
Oh.
We were never sure why the song didn't actually work in the show. We blamed it on the orchestrator. We thought, well, with that orchestration, how could the number work?
Mm-hmm.
But Don Walker was a brilliant orchestrator, so in truth, it's probably not the orchestration at all, and I would still find it a mystery as to why this song didn't work. But I love to do it occasionally at benefits, and it works very well out of context.
Still singing the female lyrics, or have you tailored it to male lyrics for yourself?
Oh, no. I set it up that I'm doing the female lyrics.
Right.
I don't wear a dress or anything. I just tell them that these will be female lyrics, so make allowances.
Indeed, yes. And the next number, Merry Christmas Bells, takes place in the shop with the workers staying after hours to attend to the Christmas decorations. And
I love that number, but it's just too complex and too long. It's wonderful. I think it's a wonderful number, but as I say, it was so complex and so long, and the show was very long, that we thought we have to cut it and write something much simpler for that moment. But I'm so glad that it's on the CD so people can hear it.
Indeed.
It's a wonderful example of Jerry Bach's dramatic instincts and his melodic gifts.
Has there been any thought about revising the lyrics and perhaps turning it into a commercial Christmas song?
No, not that. We do have an actual Christmas song that we wrote. It was done in the last scene, and we tried it out on the road. But as I say, the show was long, and adding that Christmas song, which had no dramatic value, it was just a pretty song, just lengthened the show some more, so we thought, now we can do without it. We cut it. And as it happens, we have never had a recording on it, but that day will come.
Indeed, yes. Well, when one thinks of Meredith Wilson, he managed to put It's Beginning to Look a Lot Like Christmas into his stage musical, Here's Love. And that's an idea, perhaps, if you extract some of the Christmas songs and have them as commercial Christmas songs in the popular field.
I like the way you think.
And the next cut song that we'll hear is My North American Drugstore.
That was funny. That was Jack Cassidy. And as I say, Jack was extraordinarily charismatic. He was the villain.
Mm-hmm.
And towards the end of the show, he gets fired. And he leaves on a note of triumph. telling the other employees, you're all going to be out of a job soon because I have got the rights to open this pharmacy down the block. And I'm going to make such a triumph out of that store. It'll put you, this store, out of business. And he has a song in which he describes what his is going to be like, where they will have valet parking and all of the clerks will be in tuxes and evening gowns and they'll have a string quartet play. And it's just overboard. And Jack made a showstopper out of it, my North American drugstore. But as we were out of town and we kept honing the show, we kept writing numbers that we thought were really numbers in character. Mm-hmm. And eventually, the number that Jack was singing began to look like a review number. It didn't look like a real character number. It looked like something that might have been written for a review. So we wrote a new number, and we went to Jack with it. And he said, what do you want to give me a new number for? I've got a showstopper. And we said, because it's not really a character song, and everybody else in the show has real character songs. He said, okay, I'll tell you what. I'll try the new number. If it doesn't work, we'll go back to my North American drugstore. But knowing Jack, Jack made a showstopper out of the new number.
Indeed.
It's been grand knowing you. Yeah.
As we shall hear on this evening's broadcast. And the final cut song is Christmas Eve, which I believe was cut because it's...
That was our Christmas song. That's the one I couldn't think of. Mm-hmm. That's the actual Christmas song.
Mm-hmm. And it was cut because it sort of slowed the action down at the end of the show.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, sometimes a song can be very pretty and work out of context, but dramatically... It just slows things down. It has no real dramatic purpose.
Mm-hmm. And as I told you in a previous broadcast, 12 Days to Christmas is a song that I always feature on my Christmas broadcasts. I think it's so satirical about the shopping days left to Christmas and how commercial everything has become.
Well, that was great fun to write because I was able to express all the things that I don't like about the Christmas holidays. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love the Christmas holidays and I love sending out Christmas cards because that way I can contact people. Otherwise, they wouldn't hear from me all year and I wouldn't hear from them. Mm-hmm. But there are things that in the song that I find troublesome, and it was great fun to write them.
Mm-hmm. And another great song, which you obviously had fun writing, was It Sounds Like Selling, in which we get all these cross conversations between the different clerks and the shoppers and very interesting things about, well, sort of mixed messages, I guess you could call.
Yeah, that was Jerry Bock. That was his idea. He had been listening to the radio one day and he kept switching stations, and it suddenly occurred to him that it would be very funny if you switch stations rapidly and what one announcer was saying or actor was saying on one program just clashed with the sentence that the actor or the announcer was saying in the next program, and that they just made funny combinations. He said, let's do that with our three clerks. You know, we will have three tables. The clerks are waiting on different customers, and we'll hear fragments of their conversations. And so that was great fun to follow out Jerry's idea. It's not an easy number to perform, by the way, mm-hmm. And it's not an easy number to make work because the audience's focus keeps shifting from stage right to stage center to stage left and then back and forth. But when it's staged well, it's a very amusing number.
Indeed, yes. So you really have to keep your ears open, I guess. For the
you do. You do.
And, of course, Vanilla Ice Cream, the production company, which is our Melbourne version of your New York City set in his Encores series, staged She Loves Me back in 1999, and it might have been its professional premiere in Australia, and I'm not sure about that, but they got an ice cream company to sponsor them, and each member of the audience on exiting the theatre was presented with a chocolate-coated ice cream.
Oh, how wonderful. That's terrific. That number we wrote on the road, I had an idea for it while we were in rehearsal, but I didn't know how to develop it. And the wonderful thing, this doesn't happen very much anymore, but usually in the past, Broadway shows went on tryouts. We played Philadelphia, New Haven, Boston maybe, and you got to fine-tune the show. That doesn't happen too often anymore, and shows suffer because of it. But I had an idea in rehearsal. I wasn't sure how to develop it. But when we went on our tour, when we were out of town and I could see the show every night, suddenly I knew how to develop it. And I gave it to Jerry, and Jerry knew exactly how to write it effectively, which reminds me, Jerry had worked with Jack Cassidy at a summer resort, I think it was called Camp Tamamint. Mm-hmm. So he knew that Jack had a wonderfully pure and also very amusing falsetto. And so he gave him some falsetto falsetto notes in the Replacement song, and they were perfect for Jack. I think it was those falsetto notes that won him the Tony Award.
Indeed, yes. great versatility. And unfortunately, of course, he died young. As I recall, it was in a fire in his apartment.
I believe he'd been smoking and he fell asleep. It was a tragedy, yeah.
Indeed. But, of course, he's the father of many other entertainers, of course, too. David Cassidy,
yes.
Sean
yeah.
Cassidy. And
he'd
Patrick
been
Cassidy.
Married to wonderful actress Shirley Jones, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. And, of course, She Loves Me, I guess, was the first stepping stone on the road to great things for Hal Prince, too.
It was. And Hal in rehearsal he just made the rehearsals exhilarating. His sense of humor, his sense of theater, his knowing what he wanted. He was just very decisive, inventive, and working with him was just a joy.
And, of course, he'd been a producer up to that time. Do you feel that he was a frustrated director awaiting his turn?
Right, yeah, he was. We had seen the Theatre Guild had produced a show called, what was it? I've forgotten what it was, about a wedding.
A family affair.
And it starred a comedian named Shelley Berman, and it was in trouble. And Hal was called in. And he invited us all, before they opened, he invited us all to see what he'd done. And he didn't have much time, but he almost fixed it. It may be that the show was unfixable, but what he did, we thought, was just so bright and so smart that we had no hesitation about inviting him to direct She Loves Me. He's a very smart man.
So I guess you feel pleased in having played your part in encouraging Hal onto greater things.
We did. There's a place called the YMHA, the Young Men's Hebrew Association, and they do a series of shows called Lyrics and Lyricists.
Mm-hmm.
And they just, on this past weekend, they did a show which was about the years, the collaboration, when Hal Prince produced Stephen Sondheim's shows. There were about six of those shows, and it was just wonderful, showing what Hal had accomplished and what Steve had accomplished, and it was just magic.
Yes, indeed, and we've had the pleasure of having Hal Prince out in Australia to direct some of the Australian productions of musicals that he originated, of course, on Broadway and in London, including Evita and The Phantom of the Opera, etc.
Oh, how wonderful, yeah.
Well, thank you once again, Sheldon, for introducing tonight's musical, She Loves Me. And I guess this holds a special place in your heart as well. And next month, we've already covered Fiddler on the Roof, so we shall jump ahead to the next musical collaboration between you and Jerry Bock, which was the 3 one-act compilation, The Apple Tree, which premiered in 1966.
It's been a pleasure talking to you, Rob. I look forward to the next one.
Mm-hmm. Well, have a great evening in New York, and we shall speak to you next month.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye for now.